Hey, hey, have you heard? It's your host, Chris DeMakes, and I'm headed back to the Punk Rock Museum. That's right, the powers that be have invited me back, and I couldn't be more excited. Allow me to be your guide as we wind through 5 decades of punk rock history, merchandise, and memorabilia. Cinco de Mayo weekend, Friday, May 3rd, Saturday, May 4th, and Sunday, May 5th. There'll be 2 tours each day at 12:30 p.m. and 4 p.m. And the best part for me is you. Your stories, your questions, your experiences. Yep, some of you old punkers have taught this guy a thing or two on these tours, and I love it. Head over to thepunkrockmuseum.com for tickets. Don't miss out. Only 30 spots per tour. Get your tickets now at thepunkrockmuseum.com.
Hey everybody, today's guest is Sadie Dupuis, guitarist and vocalist for the Northampton, Massachusetts indie rock band, Speedy Ortiz. Together we break down the inspiration, writing, recording, and story behind Doomsday. The single was originally recorded by Sadie all by herself back in 2011, and was remixed, remastered, and re-released this year on the Speedy Ortiz album, The Death of Speedy Ortiz and Cop Kicker Forever. This solo home recording is oozing with grit, and the lyric is super personal. There is a realness here that is so raw and vulnerable, which is no surprise that when the band tried to recreate the spirit of her initial song by re-recording it as a full band, it came up short to what Sadie had originally put together alone. The song deals with the loss of two of Sadie's close friends, and her initial conception of the song started while she was riding her bike over a bridge, the idea seemingly coming out of nowhere. And Sadie credits the devil with giving her most of her musical ideas, which is a bit of a surprise that she's not in a metal band. For all this and 3 drum tracks mixed together, don't you dare touch that dial.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast.
Well, hello, Sadie. How are you?
Hi, Chris. I'm doing A-okay. How about you?
I'm doing great. Where are you sitting? You're in a beautiful room with pink walls and a white door. But where are you at?
I'm in Philly. I'm in my little home studio room.
Awesome.
Just freshly home from the chiropractor, so it's a beautiful Friday.
That is good. I'm a chiropractic believer. Either you're a believer of chiropractic or you're not. I'm a believer. So
nice.
How's your neck and back feel now?
I have to go back on Monday. I've been having some neck drama lately. So,
is this from being on stage with a guitar strapped around you and being in cramped vans and backstage dressing rooms, or is this something else?
A year and a half ago, it probably was from that. This is from hunching over the guitar while also hitting the space bar a million times because I fucked up the riff I was trying to track. So. Yeah, shredding too hard, but at my desk while hunched over, I think, is the culprit.
Yeah, as the years go by, I think I hurt myself more at my desk as well than anywhere else.
Apparently, they're really terrible for you. Who knew?
It's amazing how that happens. Well, I want to give the listeners here a little background on you and Speedy Ortiz. The band was originally a solo project for Sadie that originated in 2011 when she moved to Northampton, Massachusetts to work on her Master of Fine Arts. While Sadie was teaching songwriting at a summer camp, she would also record her own material on a laptop in her spare time. The band was named after a character from the iconic comic book series Love and Rockets who committed suicide. Sadie explained that when she began making demos for this project, her roommate had passed away of a heart attack super young, and her childhood best friend had overdosed. She found the storyline from the comic relatable and named the band Speedy Ortiz in reference to how everybody else deals with his loss. She's also been quoted as saying, "And that is sort of what the songs were for me in the beginning." The project expanded to a full band in 2011. Major Arcana or Arcana?
I say Arcana, but I think I'm wrong.
I'm going to go with you. Major Arcana was the debut full length that was released in July 2013 on Car Park Records. The album received critical acclaim from Pitchfork, the AV Club, and Stereo Gum. The song No Below from Major Arcana was featured prominently in the video game Life is Strange years after the album's release. Speedy Ortiz did a run of dates with the Breeders and Stephen Malkmus and the Jicks in support of the album. The Real Hair EP was released in February of 2014. In the fall of that year, Doomsday was first released via Class LAMC series, in which all digital proceeds went to the Ariel Pinero Memorial Fund at VH1 Save the Music. Speedy Ortiz's second album, Foil Deer, was released in April 2015. Foil Deer was met with critical praise. NPR described Sadie as one of rock's most compelling young voices and lyricists. The New York Times praised the album and compared it as if Fiona Apple joined a punk band with even more vocal confidence.
That can't be right. Fiona Apple's voice is out of this world.
I can't say I totally disagree with that, though. She does have an amazing voice. The band, and so do you, the band toured extensively in support of the album in North America and Europe, including playing at Riot Fest. The band released their third album, Twerp Verse. Love that title.
Thank
you. February 2018, Twerp Verse. That's great. Doomsday was released this year on The Death of Speedy Ortiz and Cop Kicker Forever, which is a 2021 remix remaster of Speedy's 2011 solo home recording. So lots to dive into. That's, here.
It's a convoluted backstory, isn't it?
Well, I wouldn't say it's convoluted. It's just, you know, your publicist had sent over three different versions of the song. One that had been recorded by Speedy Ortiz, and the other one had been recorded by your first band, I believe. Was it called Quilty?
There's no recording of it, but we tried.
Okay. From what I understand, you know, going back to the initial thing that came out of you in 2011, Idea of Doomsday, is what we've went back to now. And what was the reasoning behind that? I listened to the recording that Speedy Ortiz did from 2014. I thought it was fantastic, albeit very different from your version. So how did things lead to re-releasing the demo?
Yeah. So I guess I wouldn't say so much this is a demo. In 2011, I had been playing in a band called Quilty for about 5 years, and I was primarily doing the songwriting, but alongside our drummer, who also did a lot of the production work and had been my boyfriend, my like college boyfriend for 5 years. And you know, as things go, we just like weren't, it wasn't working as a band anymore. It wasn't working as a relationship anymore. And in the middle of these sort of feelings of, I don't know if this is really how I want to keep going with my creative or interpersonal life, our roommate and really good friend passed away. So I wrote this song. I have a very distinct memory of like biking over the Williamsburg Bridge. I think I was going to work and just getting this song stuck in my head a few months after he'd passed away. And the lyrics are really, going back to them, I think I don't always like dwell in the lyrics too hard. So I'll sing it on stage, but I'm not thinking like, oh, this line's directly about this. So revisiting this song today, I'm like, damn, these lyrics are really, I don't know, I'm dealing with a lot of grief. So I did take this song to Quilty to try to work out. At that time, I think you'll appreciate this detail. We had, in lieu of a bassist, our friend Chuck played trombone. He had like a mute that had like an 1/8-inch output that he then put to a, you know, 1/4-inch output and threw a bunch of like Death by Audio boutique fuzzy octave pedals.
Low end stuff.
Yeah. So it was like, it sounded like a synth bass, but on stage, in fact, is a trombone. So we tried it out and it just was not happening right. And this was shortly before I went to summer camp for the millionth year in a row to teach kids guitar and songwriting.
Which, that's so cool, by the way, in and of itself. I would love to do something like that. I don't even know how you get that job, but that's really neat.
I got that job because I went there as a kid and I first played in bands at that camp. And then when I was old enough to work there, that was just my summer job forever until 2011. At that point, I was running the music department. So I had access to the drums and the, you know, cellos that were locked in a closet at night. And after hours, I would just, you know, use all the camp's equipment to try to demo things. And this was the first one I did. And I did it basically to try to show my bandmates, like, this is what I mean. This is how it should sound. But it turned out I really liked what I did. So this is the original version of this song. It was released on the first Speedy Ortiz EP, which was called Cop Kicker in 2011. And then we did try to redo it. I mean, we did redo it as a full band in 2014. And arrangement-wise, it's like it's identical, honestly, listening to it. It's just it's hi-fi. We did it with Nico Verne at Rare Book Room. It was kind of our trial of working with him before we did Foil Deer there.
White water's out. It's the parting of everything. Maybe it's sex. Maybe it's sexist. Maybe.
There's like nothing wrong with it, but it's, I just feel like when I first did it, the emotion of losing my friend is so close to me. And the like exploration of that, not only in the singing, but in the like three layers of drums or in the sort of guitar solos that are a little bit more improvised rather than created note, recreated note for note. I just can feel all that in the original in a way that I can't in the redo.
They are the same song arrangement wise. You nailed it, but I can't feel any different about when I listen to them. I can't feel more different, I should say, about listening to one or the other. The emotion is totally, totally different. Now, this demo from 2011 that you re-released, is it exactly what you had recorded it, or did you add any instrumentation to it when you remixed it and remastered it?
No, there's nothing added when I was remixing, but there were. Like, so this is the first, all these 22 songs that came out again this year. I'd always made demos and home recordings, but I'd never really released them. So I'd been, you know, home recording since I was 15. I think I'm 22 or 23 when I'm working on these songs for the first time. I'm 33 now. So I didn't like redo anything, but there were lots of like bad edits, things where I just didn't know what I was doing, stupid plugin choices, stupid EQ and volume, and even like there were a lot of things that were really buried in the mix because I didn't know how to mix. Like this song, for example, if you could hear, there's a really high vocal octave that I couldn't hear in the 2011 mix of this. And so when I went back to remix, I was like, I can't believe that's in there. I can't believe I can actually hit those notes at this time. So things like that I changed. And then beyond that, everything was recorded with one mic. So there's three layers of drums, but one mic getting the whole kit.
Gotcha.
Kick drum, a little imperceptible in places. So the only thing I really did add was I'd add samples of kick and snare in places where they were hard to latch onto.
Did you record this in Pro Tools?
I use Logic.
Logic? Okay. So you did.
I recorded it in GarageBand at the time, but yeah. Luckily those translate well.
Okay. Well, you know, I used to say you can't believe everything on the internet. Now I say I don't believe anything until I fact check it. So I did. I did hear. I don't know if this is true or not. So I'm going to go directly to you that you have perfect pitch. Is that correct?
I did when I was younger, and now I think not so much.
Really?
So that must have been relative pitch.
Possibly, yeah. I would think if you have perfect pitch, you have perfect pitch. And the reason I ask you this, and I'm trying to find the right words of how to say this. I listen to a bunch of your stuff, and I'm like, wow, the singing is right on point. The note choices, this demo, and again, like I said, the contrast between this and what the band recorded, it's the same song, but I couldn't feel more different listening to each one of them. This demo, and I mean this cool, this demo's dirty. It's got grit to it. You're making note choices and you're singing in this demo that are not fixed. You didn't auto-correct it. I can hear it, but I know that you can truly, truly sing from the other stuff that I listened to. So this demo is just kind of like, I think what you're saying is that the raw emotion that you lay down here just couldn't be recreated.
I think so, yeah. Or like couldn't be recreated with other people. It's so personal to me in a way that plenty of my other music is not. You know, it's very much about mourning a close friend. I mean, I got my wrist right here is a tattoo of a photo that James, who the song is about, took. And I think trying to put on, it's the, I mean, I'm sure, I don't know if you ever have this where you do some like demo backing vocals or something and you can't get back to it because it's very quiet. You did it alone. And as soon as there's another person in the room hitting, you know, R on the Pro Tools rig, you just can't get back to that place. So I think something about being alone is part of it too.
Yeah, and it was a raw emotion. You were mourning. It's the very first thing you purged out into a recording. You mentioned, did you say you're on your bike or you're driving over that bridge when the song came?
I was biking.
You were biking. So when the song, you said the song came to you, and I see guitars behind you, and I've seen you play live with a guitar. But did the song come to you in terms of chords and arrangement, or was it a lyric and melody thing, or both?
I tend to write primarily like off an instrument, so I could think, you know, this will be the melody and I have a bass or I have a drum part and, you know, a synth line that I think will go over it. I feel like this is one where I just kind of felt the arrangement in my head as I was biking, and then part of the reason it became so frustrating taking it to my band was that I didn't have the right vocabulary to say, here's what I want the drums to, you know, here's what I want to be happening. So what started as kind of a proof of concept to say, what if we played this? I had such a positive experience doing the thing where I'm playing three layers of drums that I was like, what if I do a lot of things like this? And that's kind of what led me into the 21 other early speedy things that just got reissued.
And how long after that bike ride and the initial conception of the song did you actually do this demo? Do you remember?
I would guess 6 weeks, 8 weeks.
Okay. And during that time, do you remember being in your head, or had you in those 6 weeks, I should say, had you picked up a guitar and started messing around with it? Was it still floating around just in your head?
I think I knew what it was on guitar, and I had a funny experience today of like sitting down with it, like, because, you know, this is from 2011 and I guess we re-recorded it in 2014, but I didn't really remember what I had done. And I think something that's on it that maybe is a little hard to hear on the 2011 one, but you can hear better on the 2014 one. It's something that I like love to do later. The bass is like playing the progression, but the guitar isn't quite matching up to it. So there's like an F on the bass, and then the root of the guitar, it's like an A, a C, and a G, and the C and the G maintain through this whole, like, I guess it's the chorus? Maybe it's death, whatever's going on there. So I sat today, I was like, what did I actually play here? And I think when I was a kid, I learned like an Incubus unplugged version of Pardon Me.
Like an exploding seems like an evident possibility to me. So pardon me while I burst into flames. I've had enough of the world and its people's mindless games. So pardon me.
So I'm sitting here playing it today. I'm like, this sounds like Pardon Me by Incubus. So I guess that was what, I don't know if this is what I was going for, but it came through somehow.
And did you show this demo to the band and then they tried to figure out how they were going to do their take on it, or had you not showed them the demo?
I think I did it and was like, it's not a demo. I think this is my new this will be a new side project for me.
Okay.
And my then bandmate had definitely always been supportive of my demos and home recording and stuff like that. So I think was excited that I was doing this, what at the time was going to be a side project, even though it eventually became the project.
Gotcha. Well, I want to jump into the song now, but it's like a double-edged sword. I'm excited and I want to know the story behind the lyrics, but at the same time, because like reading these lyrics, it's like, what is going on here? But
I know, I'm like, it's so personal and sad, but they're kind of obtuse.
I kind of know the backstory. And so I'm out of respect, I'm letting you know that I'm like, I really want to know what's going on here, but I'm treading lightly. You have to be comfortable with what you want
to
talk about.
You don't have to
about.
Tread too light. It's been, you know, it's been some time.
Okay, okay. Well, it just starts off verse one, right out of the gate. Vocal sounds like it's peaking, like there's a slight distortion to it.
I'm sure it is. I'm singing into a computer like microphone.
Like you were red. Yeah, it sounds like it's redlined.
And it's probably 1 a.m. and I don't want, you know, the campers like that are in a, not too in earshot to hear me doing whatever I'm doing. So yeah, I'm holding the computer up to my face or something.
And you can hear that. And I wrote in my notes, there's like a lo-fi drum sample panned left. Or was that real drums? Or it sounded like it was like a drum sample.
I think I grabbed it from another... That can't be possible because I did this first. I think it's what it is... I'm tapping on a microphone to make like a little like blown out sounding loop. So that's feeding through the first bit of the song. But by the time I got to this session in 2021, it's hard for me to remember like all the little choices, but I think I made a little loop tapping on a microphone, saying to that. And then when I was doing whatever version of mixing I did in 2011, I was like, oh, this sounds stupid, I'll delete it, but it's bleeding through the headphones.
That's
so
cool.
So I think it's, my detective work is that it's me tapping on a microphone to create a little quote unquote loop.
Yeah.
Being like, oh, this is stupid, but it's still, I'm getting headphone bleed.
I wouldn't have thought of that, but now that you say that, that's exactly what I hear. It's that sounds like what it is, and the fact that you tried to delete it, but it was still bleeding through is cool as well. Those little accidents that happen.
And it might have been that I was able to like drag the take forward, and I saw it in when I was doing it when I was remixing this year, but it sounded it still sounded stupid, so I didn't put it. Like I was like, I'm gonna put that back in, and then I think I didn't.
Most of the stuff I record is sounds stupid, so I completely get that.
If something makes me laugh because it's so stupid, that's like my greatest musical success. Generally.
Yeah, that's why I turned the computer off after midnight. You said 1 a.m. I'm getting into dangerous territory at 1 a.m. But there's also, and I don't know, Sadie, is this a bass or guitar? It sounds like either one of them, like with like a fuzz pedal on overdrive, and this is kind of panned right to that drum loop that's happening.
Some hours come over to me to lick up what I leave. Likes.
It is a bass.
It is, okay.
But it's very trebly, and a lot of the stuff when I was remixing, it's like the GarageBand like preset effects, you know? I'm trying to mix a guitar in that's called like 80s Dublin delay spinner or something stupid. Yeah. So I mostly wiped all those effects. Actually, I'll give you all my tricks. Initially, I was like, I'm going to start over. I got better plugins now. I can reamp things. I can make this sound a lot better. And I would do that. And then I'd be like, oh, but there's something about the stupid GarageBand effect that was correct. So I would make a bus and send a little bit of the track to the original 2011 like preset. So some of the gnarliness of 10 years ago GarageBand got kept in. But that is a bass, I think the fuzz pedal, I didn't get a clean one. I just went, you know, bass to fuzz pedal to probably guitar amp and then mic'd that. So it does sound pretty trebly, and that was cooked in.
This track definitely has some whiskers on it. It just sounds like, you use the word gnarly, it sounds mean, but then there's moments of like you have a beautiful voice where that comes through, but then there's these other, like I said, these note choices that you make that are kind of jarring, but they work with the track. And I want to read these lyrics now, and I'm gonna have you set them up.
Do you have it written out on a board there?
Of course.
What do you got there?
There you go.
I love it.
I've been studying your song for a day and a half.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. So and it's cool, the evolution of this song and how you admittedly, you're like, I haven't really dove into this. I wrote this so long ago. And I guess just today you're starting to think about it. So I've been doing the thinking for you. So starts right off verse one, mouth made of dried meat. There's a song that starts with a lyric, mouth made of dried meat.
It's pretty metal. So,
it is. Some, yeah, a Cannibal Corpse might get a hold of these lyrics and do something grand.
I would love to hear the Cannibal Corpse cover of Doomsday by Speedy Ortiz. Let's, yeah.
Me too. I might be able to make that happen. I know some of those guys.
Mouth
made of dried meat. Some mouths come over to me to lick up what I leave. Legs kicking the stream. Parting the white waters out. It's the parting of everything.
Some of it I can give you, like, yes, I know what I was going for here. Some of it is with the same, like, analysis I would give to a stranger's lyrics. The first two lines, listening to it today, I think it's about when you are going through grief or depression and you can feel kind of cut off from language or being able to communicate those feelings. So I think mouth made of dried meat is like the inability to talk through what I'm feeling, and like some mouths come over to me, lick up what I leave, when it's like getting water from a stone to respond to people, if you know what I'm saying. Like, yeah. People are trying with me and yet I'm kind of stuck here. And then with the kicking the stream and the lake that occurs later, I must have just finished up college when I was working on this, and I wound up getting an undergrad and then MFA later in poetry, and I'd written a thesis about a lake that was kind of very near my mom's house. She still lives near there, where they shot, I think, the second Friday the 13th at that lake.
Nice.
On a June night in 1980, Friday the 13th, 12 of her friends were murdered. Why should Friday the 13th, 1981, be any different? Friday the 13th, part 2. The body count continues.
So it's this very, like, eerie and, for me, very like American Sublime-y, you know, landmark. And I think I was using the lake to like write through a lot of feelings around that time. So I'm referring to a lake that I'd already done a ton of writing about, but okay. But not in song form.
Well, when I was learning about you and the band, and this has nothing to do with songwriting, but on your Wikipedia page, it says that you've been a vegan for some time.
It's true.
So that's
and
why
right near my mom's, between my mom and the lake, probably equidistant, there are a couple of like dairy farms that have been there for like 200 years. And I would see the baby cows in their little pens when she first moved up there. And I was like, wait, this is what we're eating? No. So that, yeah.
Well, the only reason I bring that up is just from the first lyric, mouth made of dried meat. I'm like, where is she going with this? And now I get it. That lyric makes a lot of sense. I bet you don't know what to say. A lot of times when you are completely upset, your mouth gets dry. You can't articulate. So I get that.
It'd be cool if this song was my like vegan agitprop.
It can be. You know, I'm calling this next part the pre-chorus. The more I listen to the song, I'm calling it that because even though all three pre-choruses in the song and all three choruses are this pretty much the same melodically, the lyrics change in every part.
But I know, I'm so bad about that. And it makes it so hard when I have to memorize stuff for a tour because I'm like, there are four different choruses. Which one is now?
Yeah, that is tough. I've had to deal with that, or where the second verse is the same as the first, but except for like one line, and you're trying to remember which verse that's in. It can be a nightmare. But this next part, melodically, I'm calling it the pre-chorus because it happens again, and melodically it's the same, albeit the lyrics are different. But
see, I would have called it the chorus, but I don't ever. I feel like I gave up at some point. I just label sections like A, B, C.
I thought this was the chorus too, but I'm gonna explain my argument. And you're the boss here. This is your song. If this is the chorus, it's the chorus ultimately. But I'm calling it the pre-chorus because it is different than the next part that happens. But it's just two lines, which is maybe it's sex, maybe it's sexlessness, and we'll talk about that in a second. But I'll tell you what's going on here. It sounds like another guitar joins in here. Predominantly clean compared to the other tone, but with a bit of crunch.
And maybe there's only bass in before this, is that right?
Yes. Well, no, the bass comes in on the next part, is what I'm hearing.
Bass is in from the beginning, I think.
Okay. If it's there, I'm predominantly hearing that fuzz bass that you're talking about.
Yeah.
So if you're speaking that's the bass, then yes, the bass.
I think that's the bass the whole time. And a lot of this stuff, I was like, yeah, there's a bass, but it sounds like a, you know, trebly like guitar, and it was a lot of work to try to put some low end back into some of these.
You're right. That bass is throughout here, but I'm hearing like another low end, which almost sounds like a cleaner bass coming out on the chorus part. But
that's very possible.
Okay. Well, the pre-chorus part, like I said, it sounds like another guitar joins in here, which sounds like a guitar joins it because we already have the bass. But this is very clean compared to that overdriven trebly bass tone that you're speaking of.
Hey, everybody, don't you dare go anywhere. There's lots more Krista Makes a Podcast after these messages from our sponsors.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This week on The After Party, we discuss some of the most original and unique bands and artists.
This kind of goes into Ween Bjork territory, I think, but I picked Primus.
Oh.
You want to talk about a band that should have never been on the radio or TV? It would be Primus. How do you market that? And I think that they came at the perfect time. I don't think Primus would have worked in the 80s. I don't think Primus would have worked maybe even in the 2000s. It had to happen in the 90s.
Yes.
That term you used, alternative, was such a buzzword. And it just was, it was such a blanket statement for, oh, this is weird. Oh, it's alternative. And Primus were definitely weird.
I'll tell you what, man. You bring that up.
If you'd like to hear this whole episode, plus a huge back catalog of episodes of The After Party, head over to KristaMakes.com and sign up for our supporting cast program. And now, back to the show.
Maybe it's sex, maybe it's sexlessness. What are you saying there?
I think it's when you just feel, for whatever reason or another, like there's not a way forward, and that I think is a big part of grief, like feeling very stuck. What will help me to move on? Maybe everything is just wrong, and maybe, you know, going into this place of mourning is gonna, everything needs to change to come out of it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like,
no, and
I'm. It's not. It's they're very like sexy lyrics. No, it's not about. Sex is so central to it, but it's like not really about that at all. It's kind of just citing opposites. Like I could go, you know, 90 degrees left or I could go 90 degrees right, and it's not going to make a difference. Shit is just doomed right now.
Well, and also I've loved how many songs in my life, you could probably attest to this too, that the lyrics are so ambiguous, but you still love them and they still resonate and hit you. It doesn't even have to mean anything. Some of the greatest songs, like, I don't know what I was writing there. I was just writing something. So, you know, some of this could be stream of consciousness because of the grief you were going through.
I'm sure it's a lot of it's. And a thing that I liked to do a lot then and still do is just take an hour to write the song. And then if I make revisions later, I make revisions later. But under the pressure of like, I'm going to do this in 1 hour, you get to some lyrics that maybe you don't completely understand, but you can sort of rationalize them into what you've decided the song is about.
Well, yeah, and a lot of times too, I've talked about it on this show, that then what happens is you try to best that lyric. That was just a throwaway lyric. It was just a stream of consciousness, and you try to redo it, and you can't come up with something that beats the original demo idea.
Yep, yep.
You know, which that's a trip. Now, I'm calling this next part of the chorus, Sadie, because this is where what I'm calling the real drums kick in.
Tell me where does the chorus start?
Maybe it's doom is the first first lyric right there. And that's where I'm hearing real drums, and I'm hearing this other low end, which sounds like a real bass, not the bass that's throughout the song overdriven, which sounds like a trebly guitar. But I'm hearing some low end, and I'm hearing some drums come in here. There's also another vocal pan to the right. I think that's that octave one you're talking about that comes
ridiculous
in there. Well, it's eerie.
And there's a low one too.
Yeah, it's eerie. I can hear that. And that's pan right along with the center lead vocal, and then of course the other low one, which almost sounds like it's centered maybe a little left. And then you say maybe it's doom, and doom is really held out. It's this back and forth, like a two noter that you're doing there. And then there's one whole measure of just a guitar lead that's mimicking the melody that you do on that line of maybe it's doom. So how did that come about? With having the lyric go for a measure and then the same chord progression, but now you're doing on the guitar.
I don't always have like a justification for those kinds of arrangement choices. That's just like what I know has to happen. I was just joking with my bandmate the other day because I'm attempting this week or this month to demo out a bunch of new Speedy Ortiz songs that I have written over the past year. And I've been trying to get away from the thing where, kind of similar to how I wrote this stuff, where I kind of write the song and don't immediately go straight to the DAW and program out a million drums and, you know, do a million layers the day that I write it, just so I can have a little bit more perspective on what kinds of instrumentation it might need or whatever. But arrangement-wise, it tends to just... I'm tripping over my own story here. My bandmate was like, "Oh, that's like an interesting choice that you made." That, and I was like, "I don't make a choice. Like, I'm just doing what the devil tells me to do." So I think in this case,
this is a death metal song.
Yeah.
Well, no, and the reason
I'm sure the devil told me, you know, you gotta do this like FE thing and then play.
Well, no,
the reason I talk about
that guitar solo in the middle of the chorus, it happens again, like I think maybe four more times in the song. But it never repeats the same guitar lick. It changes all the times throughout the song, and we'll get there. But I want to read these chorus lyrics and have you set these up. Maybe it's doom. Maybe it's death. Maybe it was your death. Maybe it's doom. And that's what I'm calling chorus one. And the last doom is held out again, this time with the guitar lead accompanying the vocal. So it's kind of playing along with it on that last line.
Yes.
Yes.
True.
Well, I guess what I'm asking is the lyrics here. These seem, I mean, as far as this song goes, probably the most literal lyrics in the song. Would you agree?
I think that could be true. Yeah, and it's hard for me to want to go there. Usually, I think I'm often rejecting the like how are poetry and songwriting the same, because I don't tend to work on those two things similarly. But I think one thing about having spent so much time in and around poetry, you tend to try to find a more sideways way into what you mean, like a way to say the thing that has not been said. And of course lyricists do this too, but I think poets are a lot more self-edity, so the straightforward way of saying like your death is the whatever is not usually my impulse. So
yeah, and you know, people that are poets seem to, you know, sometimes they'll write the same things over, but it's usually a stream of consciousness of a whole bunch of stuff, where song lyrics tend to have, you know, parts that repeat a lot of times. And as we know, we talked about it at the top, there's not much that repeats lyrically here.
I say Doom like a billion times, though.
Doom is a central theme. Well, out of chorus one, it jumps right into verse number two. Calling it the real drums, and I guess the real drums are the three different takes you took on the drums that you were talking about.
Yeah, all of which are in. It's so funny.
Well, it's so funny mixing it. I can hear them, especially at the end when like the last chorus, there's a bunch of tom stuff going on the drums that
would be impossible if it was one take.
The beat's still going, and it sounded like overdubs. I wasn't aware that it was three tracks blended together, and that was a result. But
so funny.
And then the clean guitar is panned off left on this verse with a really nice picking pattern. It's kind of like all of a sudden this pretty guitar comes in here. It's panned off left, and it's in complete contrast with that fuzz bass that's going out through the rest of the song. I like the change that happens here, and I want to read these lyrics. Right, this one feels right. One who was lost in the snow, buried up from below. Right, wasn't I right? Humming some shit songs I wrote about the parting of everything.
Okay. I can explain myself. So right, this one feels right is not my lyric. And I think something that has been funny in revisiting a lot of these early songs, I can get a real sense of like who my audience was, which was like my 10 friends who also wrote songs. So there's a band called Grass is Green that was a Boston kind of math rocky band. Devin McKnight from that band ultimately joined Speedy. They're some of my best friends. They would sleep on my floor when they came to play in Brooklyn. I lived in New York when I wrote this, and I was moving to Massachusetts not so long after. So there's a Grass is Green song that he says, like, right, this one feels right.
But of all these things just floating around.
I just grabbed his lyric. And then, so this is a literal lyric, this next one. James, who was my roommate, I met him because he would come to Quilty shows and take amazing photos. And he just kept coming to our shows and being like, hey, check out my Flickr. He loved going to concerts and taking pictures of his friends' bands. So we kind of met through that. And the last night that I saw him, there had been this like insane snowstorm, and I had seen my then boyfriend's other band, which is called Ava Luna. They're still a band, I think, play, and our van got stuck in the snow in like the middle of the street somewhere in Williamsburg. We had to abandon the van overnight. It was like a serious snow emergency. I think the trains closed down. We had to have a bunch of people sleep over. So this was kind of the last like big night I had with James before he died. So it's very literally like, you know, and God, it is a little traumatic to like tell the story about it. But so he died that night, and we didn't know for days because he, you know, would go to work in the morning, and sometimes he'd be out at night. So we might not have seen him, and he'd always close his door when he left. So he had just died in our apartment and was like there. So I think like the one who's lost in the snow, buried up from below, is like, you know, he passed away, and I just didn't want to confront or like think about his loss and how much it had really devastated me. Yeah. So I guess it's about the rightness of, you know, finally grappling with how much I missed my friend and just how traumatic it had been to lose him like that.
Yeah. I'm
sorry podcast listeners for this.
No,
sad story.
No, sometimes unfortunately it's things, life things that happen that we write these emotional songs. And this verse, especially now that you've explained this lyric, it's so heavy lyrically, but like I said, this verse kind of gets pretty here. To me, it's almost like you're celebrating his life, that clean guitar that comes into the left speaker. It's like, where did this come from? Because the rest of this song is
definitely
dirty, you know? It just sounds...
And that last night that we spent together was like so much fun, you know?
Yeah.
And I would have remembered it forever, even if, you know, it hadn't preceded this terrible, sad loss.
Yeah.
But in terms of the guitar, that like arpeggio... I was obsessed with this Scout Niblett, Bonnie Prince Billy duet, I think called Kiss.
Felt it come in for so long. If I'm to be the fool, then so it be.
And it's like a very similar kind of picking pattern, and the you know, the little bend on the third that I'm doing is like, I think, kind of lifted. I mean, it's like a very normal progression and pattern, but at least that song was kind of in my head.
That little bend halfway through is awesome. You know, it kind of takes it away from the I'm calling it pretty, from the pretty guitar. It takes just a little bit of gruff back on it, then it goes right back. As I mentioned before, all three pre-choruses and three choruses have different lyrics. Here's pre-chorus two. Same melody though as pre-chorus one, and different from the chorus melody. So that's why I've differentiated these two. But pre-chorus two is "Away on an Ash, Your Timeline Could Not Be Matched."
Yeah. Okay. So we got another buddy band reference here. Pyle is another band from at that time from Boston. So my like best friend bands. You know, I was playing in a New York band, but Pyle and Grass Is Green were like two of my favorites. And when I moved to Massachusetts and started doing Speedy all the time, part of it was like so I could play shows with my friends again. And Pyle had a song from maybe that year or the year before called "Away on a Rainbow." It's a great song.
Mister was born, here I come from evening. He'll come out better, he'll come out sooner.
But "Away on an Ash" is like a way of like inverting that. Like "Away on a Rainbow" sounds so like a woohoo, here we go, like good times happening. "Away on an Ash" is like, like here I go falling down from the sky into like despair. So it is again like a play on a friend's lyric to sort of fit this dour time in my life.
No, these, like I said, before I ever listen to a song, if I haven't heard it on the podcast, I read through the lyrics first. I don't want to hear the song. I want to hear or just visually see and put my eyes on it and read through the lyrics. And I'm reading this going, what is going on? So this is intriguing for me to get the story.
And I think like your timeline could not be matched, like irreplaceable, like you were a one-of-a-kind person and nobody else I know has had a life like yours and interests like yours and will be the same friend you were to me. So I guess that's kind of what that lyric was.
That's awesome. Chorus two, again, the drums are here still, the three drum takes, I should say. The lyrics are different. I'm not giving you grief. I'm just teasing you.
No, I tease myself.
Yeah.
And there, you know, now that you're saying it, I bet there's a second bass on here too, which is
I think,
just a hysterical choice.
I think there is. I really do. But the actual second
and
bass.
And I still do shit like this. My friend Sarah Tudson, Illuminati Hotties, was just making fun of me. She just tweeted at me the other day because I tweeted this thing that I had said to my bandmate that the devil makes my arrangements for me. And she just replied three bass guitars because one of the songs we did together on the last Sad 13 album, I was like, well, there's three basses and I want to hear all of them.
Have you ever heard of a band called Ned's Atomic Dustbin from the UK?
No, but are they a triple bassist
They're
band?
They're a double bass band. Yeah, they got two basses. They're awesome.
When you're
They're awesome.
I like, yeah.
Yeah, but I like with, that. With that said,
Sheena Ringo, I think the great, oh God, she's done so many genres of music that I don't even know what to say, but mostly pop, I guess I would say.
Yeah.
She was in like a three bass band, well, which I think is so cool.
But as I said from the top, I didn't know if it was bass or guitar. I said it's one of the two, which you said it was bass. It's just so overdriven and trebly, and it more mimics a guitar. So the other one is what a traditional bass, I guess, would sound like. So I think it's cool. But chorus two is... This one, it's doom, drowned in the lake, with every stroke you take, baby, it's doom. And after the first, this one, it's doom, after that first line, it goes to another measure just musically, same chord progression, but the guitar lick comes back here. But as I said a little bit ago, it changes from chorus one. So you weren't trying to play the same things. This is kind of just stream of consciousness of what was coming out with the guitar leads.
Mm-hmm. And a ton of this album... it's just whatever I played the first time is what's in there. So we relearned another one of these songs recently to play Speedy to two outdoor shows this year. Really big year for me on the stage. But my bandmate was laughing at me because every single chorus, the like guitar quote unquote lead, is unrelated to the previous chorus.
Yeah.
So I'm sure I'm just getting down ideas and I was like, oh, I'll pick one later.
But, well, no, and alas. I think the word would be, I think the recording with the band, you know, this could sometimes be the connotation of something being more cohesive could be better. I'm not saying it's better, but there is some more cohesion with the band thing than what you got going here on the demo. And I think that again, that goes back to this was just what just initially came out through all the grief you were going through. But lyrically, what's going on here? This one, it's doom, drowned in the lake with every stroke you take, baby, it's doom.
Yeah, I don't know about the baby. I think I'm talking to myself probably. Drowned in the lake. This is the same lake that I referred to earlier. I think it's a similar. It's like a similar intention from the maybe it's sex, maybe it's sexlessness. Like every stroke you take, it doesn't matter. You know, everything's fucked.
That's one of my favorite sayings. It works for everything.
Yeah.
The last baby, it's doom. You're doing the two-noter back and forth. Doom. When that's happening, the drums just kind of dissolve. To almost like just a muffled kick drum. Like it almost goes back to you maybe tapping on the mic there. And then for 20 seconds from the 2 minute and 12 second mark to the 2 minute and 32 second mark, there is like a dueling guitar solo. There's two guitars, like a dueling guitar solo that's happening. It's kind of atonal. The guitars are playing off one another. One's panned a little more right and one's panned a little more left. So I'm calling this section, it could either be the bridge, but I'm calling it the guitar solo.
Stephen Malkmus and the Jicks song called Church on White that I believe is also about him losing a friend, although I don't think I was like making an intentional parallel. But there is a sort of dueling guitar solo at the end. like I often get more emotion from the like instrumental aspects of a song than the lyrics, and there's something about that guitar solo that has always just been very like emotionally clear to me. And I think I'm kind of trying to do that through this song.
The rest of this song has that dirt, that grit. I hate not using the term like, you know, Pearl Jam or Nirvana, but it's grungy, this song. You know, it's got some weight to it. And the only part that gets a little pretty for a second is that verse too. The rest of this guitar solo is just building until it gets to what I'm calling pre-chorus 3. Same melody here before we hit the chorus as the other two pre-choruses. Called me the hex. I never said I was less.
The hex is a Pavement song. I don't think that's what I was going for, but
which, by the way, points for being in a female tribute band to Pavement called Babement. I also read that.
Thank you.
That's awesome.
And you know what? I had just
that's awesome.
So Babement did two shows. It's like been vastly overstated its relevance and longevity in my life, but it was like right.
The legend's bigger than what was.
Seriously, but it was like right. And honestly, I think it was like we did one show and then a week later, someone was like, "Want to do it again at SUNY Purchase?" And we got a different drummer because it was like a one show plan. But I had just learned like every Pavement song on guitar, so I think a lot of those kinds of like guitar solo noodly choices were just like the muscle memory for me around then. So it makes sense that I'd be.
Were you ever into Tortoise or Seeing Cake or any of those?
Not till later.
Okay, because yes. I hear a lot of that in this. You know, I hear a lot of that. It's cool that you've heard of them. Getting into chorus 3 here, the last chorus of the song. I'm doomed. And there's another measure after that where you're holding out the two-noter on doomed vocal. Another measure with, again, another guitar lead that's different. The second line, you just say doomed, the two-noter for the full measure, doomed. And then it's one measure again with just the guitar solo that's different. And then you say doomed again, same thing, the guitar solo happens. And then we get into an outro verse. Again, the song, it just changes here. The drums are now gone. The single clean guitar pan left and lead guitar off to the right are playing its own counter melody. And the outro, I'm calling it an outro verse. The lyric is, it harkens back to the second half of verse 2. Changes two words here, but it's, wasn't I right? Humming some shit songs I wrote about the parting of everything. And the melody changes on everything here. You go down. You kind of know that the song's over. Was that a conscious choice, or was that?
I hope I know the song is over.
Was that a conscious choice with that melody change there? Do you remember? Because it's neat.
I feel like it's almost never like a totally conscious choice. I just like know what needs to happen there.
Yeah,
and there can be certain arrangement differences, but yeah.
Well, how did you write this ending? Because after you say everything, where that melody changes, everything kind of comes down. You realize the song's over. The lo-fi drum samples come back in.
The little clicks.
The little clicks off to the left speaker. But then it's also panned. It sounds like the delay of it is to the right. So you're getting this ping pong with your ears as it fades out. It's only about maybe 3 or 4 seconds. And then it's gone.
I think that was a 2021 update. And there's a lot of little things like that.
Okay.
Where I'm like, this should be doing a little more.
Okay.
So a lot of like the, any kind of like cool delay shit that's happening in the, this 2021 version is something that I did in like February of this year.
Okay, so there were a few things that were expounded on from the original demo.
No new recording, but like entirely new effects. So I guess to some extent, like new recording in terms of what the delay generated and how I manipulated it to change pitch and stuff like that.
And how you mixed it.
Well, yeah, I guess those to me are kind of twinned.
Right.
Those little production updates were like mixed choices.
So now, I mean, it's been 10 years since you recorded this and you re-released it. Why was it important for you to re-release this song now? What did you feel was the you know, why did you do it?
So it's the 10-year anniversary of this project. It was last month. I think the EP that Doomsday came out on actually came out late October of 2011, and then the Death of Speedy Ortiz album came out in November of 2011. And it's funny, like this song in particular, I'm going to use big scare quotes here, but it was like a hit to my 10 friends that I send my songs to. I had never like sent them something that, you know, they were sending me back like flip phone videos of them playing the like that like F with the hammer,
yeah, you know,
pull off hammer on thing. And so I just put these up on Bandcamp. It was like my very much my side project. Quilty still had shows booked with Pyle and Grass is Green and the friends bands I'm telling you about. But people just liked this music more than anything I'd done in the, and by people I mean like the DIY spaces that I,
yeah,
would, you know, was hoping would put me on second of five rather than first of five. And my, you know, 10 friends also in bands just seemed to gravitate to it more. So I had it on Bandcamp, and very quickly, like, it just had more interest than Quilty had. And I also was feeling really frustrated trying to play in a band with my ex, and just wanted to do something different. And so
that gives me anxiety thinking about that. Not your ex, yeah, but like being in a band with one of my exes. I'm sitting here getting sweaty palms. So that has to be weird. And I've talked to people that have played with their significant others in bands, and when it goes sour, it gets weird. I mean, Fleetwood Mac wasn't lying.
There are people I've dated that I could play with now, but this was a tricky one because, like, having been in this relationship, When I was in high school, I loved to home record, and I, you know, got my drum kit and was starting to get better at drums, and I took like an audio engineering class when I was like 18, and then I started dating someone who was a drummer and also was in school for audio engineering, so I like didn't have to do that stuff, it like put a pause in something that I was really drawn to and probably should have kept pursuing. So I think having this project kind of like, to the side project to work on, kind of brought me back to myself in a way, to my interest in producing and arranging and writing drums and stuff like that. So I got friends who played in my, you know, peer bands to kind of be my quote unquote backing band for some of these, for some shows for this quote unquote solo project. And then we just kept playing together, and Speedy became a band. But I was always really proud of these solo recordings, and they never had a proper release. Like, I think Speedy's drummer was like, this is good, you should put this out. So he duped like 25 cassettes of it that go for too much money on Discogs now. But other than that, never really released. So I was like, 10-year anniversary, this is a perfect time to do it. But also, I need to fix 22 mixes because I know I had ideas that I didn't know how to technically execute, yeah, at that time. And now I can help young me.
That's awesome.
You,
that makes sense. You're able to revisit it 10 years later and see the finished idea through and kind of have some resolve with it. That's awesome. We're about to wrap up. I just want to thank you for being on the show today and talking about this. It's heavy. I'm sorry about what happened to your friends. And but before we go, is there anything you'd like to leave for the listeners? Anything coming up with you solo, with the band, any other side projects, some tours coming up?
Ooh.
What do you got going on?
No, literally nothing. I'm working on another Speedy album. I put out another album last year with Sad 13, which is now my solo project where I get to
I read about
be the
that.
Control freak I was always born to be. what do I want to leave you with? I will say, Jackie, my publicist, got a big virtual kiss from me. I was like, finally, you've got me on a ska podcast. I was so into your band and into, I was very, very into ska in a formative way. So it's, and yet I never get to do any press that that allows me to say so. So thank you for inviting me.
It's very, very nice to say you're more than welcome. And
I've been referring to the death of Speedy Ortiz and Cop Kicker Forever as my checkered past. Finally, a podcast where I get to make this joke and it will be appreciated.
It is appreciated. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks.
Hey, everybody, don't touch that dial. There's plenty more Krista Makes a Podcast after a few words from our sponsors.
Hey, this is Chris Swinney, formerly of the Ataris and currently host of That One Time on Tour, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Have you ever wondered what it's really like on the road? The highs can be euphoric, but the lows can be crushing. Join me every week as I chat with industry pros about what it's like living out their wildest dream and, in some cases, their worst nightmare. Past guests of the show include members of NoFX, Pennywise, Bad Religion, and more. Listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey, everybody. If you like Krista Makes a Podcast, I'm going to assume that you like music podcasts. And if you like music podcasts, check out One Hit Thunder. Each week, we dive into a one-hit wonder, and along the way, we gain some knowledge and have some laughs. Lou Bega, Crazy Town, Harvey Danger, The New Radicals, A-ha. We're over 100 episodes in now, and to paraphrase the great Matthew Wilder, nothing's going to break our stride. Subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your pods.
As we near the end of the show, here's a band you might not know.
Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know. If you'd like your band to be considered for Krista Makes a Podcast, all you have to do is email your song via MP3 only and your bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. This week's featured artist is Stuck on Planet Earth, an alternative-based rock band from Toronto, Canada, featuring Adam Bianchi on guitar and vocals, Al Capo on bass and vocals, and Andrew Testa on the drums. Here's a snippet of their song, Ghosts on the Radio.
Chris and Chris.
Well, Chris, you know I've been excited about that one for a long time. I've been trying to make a Speedy Ortiz episode happen for a long time, and I thought Sadie was so cool, and I thought that episode was amazing.
Yeah, she's a lot of fun. You know, it's interesting. I had even told you this before we started rolling today. I was going to choose my words correctly with her. She's got such an amazing voice, and to be that vulnerable in a sense of releasing a demo, albeit 10 years later, you're still proud enough to release a demo that by her own admission is just kind of like this first purge thought that came out of her, you know? And there's a vulnerability there that I wish I had.
So I thought at one point she said, well, it's not really a demo. You were calling it a demo throughout the episode. And I kept being like, oh, is she going to get mad that he's calling it a demo? But I know what you're getting at. And I'm sure she did too. It was that first initial recording, which, yeah, the song was re-recorded by the band, but then she realized that the original recording, what you're calling the demo, whether it is or not a demo, is beside the point. But she knew that she couldn't match that original feeling and emotions that came out in that recording that was just re-released.
Yeah, and by demo, I just meant those initial recordings that, again, she had played those for the band, and they tried to emulate what she had done there, and she never felt that she got back to the root cause of what she was going for. It just never quite lived up to those initial recordings of what I'm calling the demo.
And I thought it was cool that she's like, yeah, I recorded this in GarageBand. And, you know, yeah, this song has a lot of elements that she talked about that are raw. She's tapping on the mic,
yeah,
as a drum and doing just whatever to get the ideas down and get the ideas out of her. But in actuality, you could make something that could be on modern rock radio or something in GarageBand if you know what you're doing. I feel like GarageBand, people talk about it as if it's some sort of inferior program. And yeah, you can't do as many things as you can do in Pro Tools or Logic or whatever in GarageBand, but you can still, with the right knowledge of what you're doing makes something that sounds amazing in GarageBand.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And this just, I think what drew me to this track was the just those primitive instincts. You know, she even said that nothing really makes sense on paper. None of the choruses repeat, none of the pre-chorus. It's just like a whole different set of lyrics throughout the whole thing. None of the guitar leads are the same, for the measure after the first line of the choruses. But that's what she was going for. And it's funny because I've had that happen with demos where you go try to recreate it with the band. It just never lives up to that initial idea that you came up with.
Right. And for anyone who's listening to this who's not familiar with Speedy Ortiz, this is very different. It's a very different sounding song. It's a very different, you know, Speedy Ortiz always has interesting melodic choices and chord choices and definitely doesn't sound like other bands. I think it's what draws me to them. Yeah, I never really thought about like the Pavement comparison because I'm not like a big Pavement guy, but I am a big Speedy Ortiz guy. But I get it. I get that comparison in some ways. But my point being here is that they have songs like, go listen to Lucky 88, which was a single from a few years ago. A polished pop song in a way. It has its unique qualities, but it's very polished. This is a completely different type of song.
Yeah, a lot of their catalog is polished, as you're talking about, Chris, and they're almost these little pop gems. And I got a hold of this. I'm like, what is going on here? And I applaud the vulnerability of releasing something like this because it doesn't sound like the rest of their catalog, you know. But again, there was something here that the band tried to recreate. And taking this song, I kept saying, I think I used the words, it's got some dirt on it, it's got some fuzz, it's nasty, it's grungy, and to try to sweeten that up in the pop sense with the band just wouldn't give off the same sentiment.
It's pretty inspiring to me as a songwriter that I have, you know, I have hundreds of songs I've written. I've drop boxes full of all these songs and I listen back to them sometimes if I'm trying to like extract certain ideas, but there might be like 30 or 40 of those songs where I'm like, I really like this, but I would never have the confidence to release that because it has those, I don't know, imperfection is putting it lightly. You know, it's demos. It's stuff I was doing off the cuff and whatever ended up recorded is what ended up there. But this is pretty inspiring to me that she's like, no, I want to put this out there. This is the real deal.
Yeah, I can't think of a demo that I did as recent as a year ago that I would want to put out in its demo form. I don't think I've ever had a song that I've been able to stand by that much later in my career. So again, a nod to her for that.
I thought there was a few things she said that were pretty funny and memorable to me. One of them is, I don't know what the exact quote was, but basically she said, if she's doing something when recording music, whether it's by herself or with her bandmates, and it makes her laugh, then she knows she's doing something right. And I think that's so true. Like, I think that maybe sometimes we're scared to not be serious, like, oh, we're not being serious about our music. But a lot of times if that thing can make you laugh, if it can evoke that emotion from you, then it's actually pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I mean, sometimes you even with a song as deep lyrically as this is, sometimes you have to step back from it and realize we're just, you know, 3, 4, 5 people sitting in a room with instruments trying to create something. And there's a certain hilarity to that in and of itself.
There is. I can't tell you how many times I've talked to my bandmates about how funny it is that we get up on a stage and we sing and dance.
Yeah.
and people pay to see that. Like that's hilarious within itself.
Yeah.
You know, I know you feel that. Another thing she said I thought was really funny is that the devil makes her arrangements for her, referencing a song. Her friend had referenced a song where I guess she had 3 basses on it, which, hell yeah. The more bass, the better, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, and we've already had Obituary on the show. Maybe we give them the track and have them do their cover of it. Because she even said she'd like to see a death metal take on this song.
Yeah, and she talked about playing music with a significant other. I've never done that. I can't imagine what that's like. Obviously, everyone knows the story of like No Doubt back in the day and Fleetwood Mac, like you brought up. But that has to be such a strange thing when you are no longer together. I can imagine it's strange when you are together, let alone when you're no longer together.
I kind of hated you before when we were lovers. Now I really hate you and we're in the same band. Oh, this is going to work out well.
Yeah, we're going to write songs about each other. I think it's actually a pretty cool dynamic, but yeah. I can imagine it also being pretty stressful.
Well, and the last thing I'll say about this track is, you know, I kind of know why she wanted to talk about it. I think there's a certain, as we've said in the show before, a certain catharsis that happens with music. You're purging, you're getting something out, and we've had people, as you know, come on the show, some heavy stories. Bill Stevenson, you know, we had Matt Embry with RX Bandits. Sometimes the story behind the song is what drags you in. And here she was riding her bicycle over the Williamsburg Bridge, and the song hit her. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I thought it was really cool that she shared that. I know people were just hearing the audio, but I could see it in her face. You know, as we were recording this here, is like, this was hard for her to talk about, and I really thank her for that. That was really awesome. She didn't have to do that, and I think that's really cool that she would care enough to share that. Chris, I geeked out a little bit to her after the conversation was over, and I'm like, I'm such a huge fan of your band. I had discovered them because of this very strange video game called Life is Strange. Their song, No Below, amazing song, was prominently featured in the game. I feel like it's worth mentioning that also after she had mentioned that she was a fan of Less Than Jake. She mentioned her checkered past, and that was cool. I wouldn't, you know, obviously I have that checkered past. I came up with ska and punk and everything, but I wouldn't have necessarily expected, based on Speedy Ortiz's music, that Sadie would have had that past, but that was pretty cool, I thought.
I thought so as well.
And you know what else is pretty cool, Chris?
What you got?
It's a whole new year. It's 2022 now. It's time to start fresh. It's time to start over. Anything is possible.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Happy New Year to each and every one of you. It's our third year in existence for Chris Makes a Podcast.
I can't believe that. That's wild. And Chris, you are starting the new year fresh too, because you got a new music release.
That's right. I got my third 7-inch to coincide with my book, Blast from the Past. There's two songs on this. One's called 2 Minutes to Bus Call, and the other song's called In Memoriam. You can find it over at chrisdemakesabook.com. That'll redirect you to the Smart Punk Records site. And there is no pre-order with this. We have all items in stock, ready to be shipped once you place your order. There's also a back patch and a shot glass that is with this round of stuff. So I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, man. You know, I saw a person or two giving you a hard time, like, hey, I thought the full length was supposed to come. What people have to realize is there has been a major delay at Vinyl Plants, which is why, you know, the past couple 7-inches you did, they did a pre-order and it took a long time. This time, the records are in hand. They're ready to go, man. That's pretty cool.
They are in hand. This is the last 7-inch I'm going to do. So there's two songs on each record. So right now I've released 6 songs from the solo full-length album. And there's going to be another 6 songs tacked onto the record for a total of 12. And can't wait to get that out. Hopefully by the end of 2022, I'm thinking 2023 with all the delays, but as soon as possible.
Hell yeah, man.
So if you want to get your hands on this limited edition 7-inch, head over to ChrisDemakesABook.com. Again, no pre-orders. They're ready to roll. And I want to thank this week's guest, Sadie Dupuy from Speedy Ortiz, for sitting with us. It was a lot of fun. And we're going to leave you here with a song from the 7-inch. This is 2 Minutes to Bus Call.
Welcome to wear every night, regardless if you're feeling right. It's cause for celebration with beggars and hangers on. Wear champagne wishes and caviar dreams aren't exactly what they seem. Crack an ice cold one and pass the bong. The night is young, the night is young, the night is so young, but it'll
instead of going out last night.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty, host of the Punk Rock NBA podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. My podcast is all about doing what you love for a living, and every week I sit down and talk to people who have done exactly that. For example, musicians like Tommy from Between the Buried and Me, Matt from Periphery, Lil Lotus and Shinigami, among many others, photographers, artists, designers, YouTubers like Glenn Fricker and Sarah Dici, and I unpack exactly how they got to where they are today with the goal of helping you do the same. So if that sounds cool, you can listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com, and I'll see you there.
Hello out there.
Yes, hello out there, everyone. I'm Hal Schwartz.
And I'm Flynn McClain. Together, we host None But the Brave, a podcast dedicated to the music and career of Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce and E Street Band are on tour right now for the first time in 6 years, and we're taking a detailed look at what's happening on stage in our bi-weekly episodes.
We've also been recently joined by some very exciting guests, including rock journalist Warren Zanes and Stephen Hyden, Backstreet's Magazine founder Charles Cross, and Barstool's Kirk Menahan.
If you're a diehard Springsteen fan, this is the show for you.
So please subscribe to None But the Brave on your favorite podcasting platform, and we hope to see you further on up the road.
Thank you so much! We'll be seeing you!